This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, tens of millions of Nigerians head to the polls on February 16 to elect the next president and legislature. What's at stake for Africa's largest democracy and most populous nation? Given that one out of every four sub-Saharan Africans is a Nigerian, and Nigeria's economy is among the two largest on the continent, credible elections would be a boost for multi-ethnic democracy on the continent. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. After years of rigged elections, Nigeria began a democratic trajectory in 2015, when a credible general election was followed by a peaceful transfer of power from the incumbent, President Goodluck Jonathan, to the opposition candidate, Muhammadu Buhari. Now, incumbent President Buhari of the ruling All Progressives Congress faces former Vice President Atiku Abubakar of the People's Democratic Party in what appears to be a tight race. In his historic election 4 years ago, Buhari, a former military general, campaigned on combating endemic corruption and defeating the extremist group Boko Haram. However, he is seen to have fallen short on both counts. Plagued by health issues, Buhari spent much of his current term abroad for medical treatment. Well, with us to analyze the candidates, the issues, and the challenges facing the victor are Judd Devermont. He's the director of the Africa Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, a Washington-based policy group. Prior to joining CSIS, Judd Devermont served as the U.S. National Intelligence Officer for Africa from 2015 to 2018, and Bronwyn Bruton. She's deputy director of the Africa Center at the Atlantic Council, a think tank also based here in Washington. She's a recognized expert on the conflict in Somalia and violent extremist groups throughout Africa. And both panelists join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Well, Judd Devermont, let me begin with you. Talk about the significance and what's fundamentally at stake in these elections. And let me just preface that with the fact that there's a longstanding pattern in Nigeria that the presidency alternates normally between representatives of the predominantly Muslim North and Christian South every 8 years, but it's still the North's turn. So both candidates, Buhari and Abubakar, are both Fulani Muslims from that region.
This is the most important election in sub-Saharan Africa in 2019. The challenge has been that there hasn't been a big narrative about it. As you said, this isn't about zonal rotation between the North and South or South and North. It's not the first transition between military rule and civilian rule or between one civilian to another. This election is about two flawed candidates fighting over the issues. And I think that's really important. In 2015, we saw, based on polling samples and academic studies, that issues did make a difference. And in this case, while some people will be voting against their region or religion, they're arguing about who is better for the economy, who is better for security. And I think that's really remarkable in terms of where Nigeria is going to go next.
Bronwyn Bruton, how do you see the significance and what's at stake in this election?
Well, my opinion is mostly that this is a really depressing election, that essentially we are talking about a battle between an incumbent who has disappointed on the security side and is presiding over an economy that has a youth unemployment rate of 55%, battling against an opposition candidate, Abubakar, who's already run for president and failed three times and has been accused of stealing $125 million of taxpayer money during his run as vice president. So when you talk about the significance for Nigeria, I think primarily I would say that it shows that Nigeria's democracy is not delivering very much to the youth, who are more than 50% of the electorate at this point, and that that's a really sad thing.
It's true. Both gentlemen are septuagenarians, and they're very flawed, as you said. One accused of corruption, Buhari, the incumbent, said that he would fight corruption, but we haven't seen much evidence of that. How do you see the candidates, Judd Devermont, this choice that Nigerians are facing? To what extent is it some sort of a referendum on Buhari? How do you see the matchup?
As I said, I think these are both problematic candidates that are flawed. And unfortunately, sometimes systems don't put up the best candidates, but these are the Nigerians. These are who the Nigerians are picking. So on one hand, you have Buhari, former military leader in 1983, overthrown in 1985, became a Democrat, ran for office three different times, 2003, 2007, and 2011, and then finally one on 2015, which, as you said, about corruption. And he has been unremarkable. He has taken out a couple of governors. He finally is prosecuting his former secretary to the government of the Federation. But a lot of corruption continues, and a lot of people around him are perceived as corrupt, and he hasn't lifted a finger. I think what most Nigerians, though, are thinking about is the economic management under Buhari. Now, if you are a northerner, you potentially see Buhari as delivering some social justice and social reform, financial transfers, and you're pleased with his infrastructure development. But the business community has been really frustrated with the way Buhari handled the recession. When the oil market crashed, Buhari did not move fast enough to deal with the Naira. And so Lagos and other financial hubs don't think that he's a good steward for the economy. Atiku, on the other hand, has been, as Bronwyn said, in politics since the late 80s, vice president, and then flinted between parties. He is seen as a byword of corruption for corruption in Nigeria, but he's also seen as a much more agile and efficient political networker relative to Buhari. He's a little more pro-market than Buhari.
So how do you see it, Bronwyn, with respect to Atiku Abubakar in terms of economic management? Would he be presumably more appealing to Nigerians and therefore have a better shot?
Well, as Judd said, I think that it's always been understood that the economy is an Achilles heel for Buhari. He was a military leader. He is older. His sense of the economy, I get the impression, comes out of the 1970s. And although there are definitely significant corruption allegations against Atiku, he is a successful businessman. He's made hundreds of millions or billions of dollars over the years, and he definitely has a grasp on the global economy. He is a modern businessman. And so I think that as far as that goes, yeah, he is far more likely to be a capable steward of the economy than Buhari is, in my view.
One of the ways that I think you can look at this, Carol, is that Buhari has antiquated views about the economy and he's dead set on pursuing them. Whereas Atiku, I think, is a little more flexible in how he thinks about things. And I think that Atiku Abubakar candidacy would be much more responsive to sort of the orthodoxy about how you manage your economy.
And notwithstanding the desire on the part of many Nigerians to reduce graft, corruption, which doesn't seem to have happened, notwithstanding Buhari's pledge, they seem to be more concerned about security. And we're seeing a resurgence of the Boko Haram insurgency. Again, another area where Buhari promised to defeat this extremist scourge. How do you see his success or failure in that regard?
If we talk about security, we have to talk about Boko Haram in the Northeast, and we have to talk about the Middle Belt. But I'll start with Boko Haram in the Northeast. Buhari showed, I think, real initiative in the beginning part of his term in 2015. He brought in new leadership. That was very positive. And I think along with a lot of the regional partners helped roll back Boko Haram. But then he sort of lost focus, started declaring it technically defeated multiple times, started reallocating resources to other problems, not really committing. You know, we all thought Buhari, as a former military leader, would really have his head focused on this issue, and it really hasn't. And in the last couple of weeks, we have seen really an upsurge in attacks by Boko Haram, overrunning villages, overrunning military bases. And so I think he's disappointed a lot of people in the Northeast.
So, Bronwyn Brewton, Buhari hasn't had much success in curbing corruption. He has not really diversified the economy away from oil. What's the verdict on trying to combat the Boko Haram insurgency in your view?
My view is that Buhari, as Judd pointed out, certainly deserves credit for the early gains that he made against Boko Haram. Boko Haram used to control a territory the size of Belgium, and now it does not. So it has been put on the back foot. And initially that looked very positive, but unfortunately what happened was that Boko Haram adapted and has taken up asymmetric warfare and has become quite effective at it. And so it's evolved. And I think that the more worrying development is not actually Boko Haram, but a splinter faction of Boko Haram called the Islamic State in the West African province, which is far more closely allied to the Islamic State and has gone about its insurgent project with far greater competence than Boko Haram has. This IS faction that has emerged in the last few months has taken hundreds of square miles of territory It briefly took over a town near Lake Chad called Baga. It defeated a multinational force of 500 soldiers. It's attacked several Nigerian military bases, and it's pretty much destroyed a town in northeastern Nigeria. And so this is a much bigger threat in my mind than Boko Haram ever was to northern Nigeria, and it's something that has happened on Buhari's watch, and he needs to take responsibility for that.
And it's certainly a threat to Nigerians, but I suspect, Judd, that it also concerns the United States. What are the stakes for the United States in this particular election, and particularly as it relates to national security and the spread of these extremist groups, particularly this offshoot, the Islamic State in the West African province that's rearing its head?
Everything that the United States cares about in Africa comes together in Nigeria. Economic prosperity, innovation, but also crime and insecurity. And once upon a time, Nigeria was an exporter of security, and now it's an exporter of insecurity. And so when the United States government has looked at the issues of Boko Haram, and particularly, as Brahman says, ISIS West Africa, there's considerable concern. First of all, Boko Haram, before it split, had attacked the UN facilities in Abuja, Nigeria in 2011. And then this split group, which is aligned with the Islamic State, tends to be much more sophisticated in the way it's building ties to the communities and its target set. Boko Haram targets villages and communities and harasses Nigerians. ISIS West Africa hits government installations. And so there's a concern about what that means for the broader ISIS network in West Africa, and it's a concern about, will their target set ultimately evolve to include American facilities and persons?
So, Bronwyn, how did this splinter group, Islamic State in West Africa, emerge? And where do you see it going? And do you think Atiku, the challenger to Buhari, could do better in trying to thwart these extremist groups?
It's very hard to speak to what Atiku's response to the rise of the Islamic State in the North would be, because he has not made a lot of specific comments on security. He also hasn't made a lot of very specific comments on the economy, for that matter. He's made a lot of promises, but I don't have a clear sense of how he would differ in his approach, frankly. So on that, I'm not sure that I can cast much light. On the rise of the Islamic State West Africa, it appears to have been a coup perpetrated by the Islamic State itself. The Islamic State leader was apparently very unhappy with the leadership of Boko Haram, a man named Shekau, who, as Judd pointed out, has indiscriminately harassed communities in the north, slaughtering Christians and Muslims alike, and in particular terrorizing young women and school children, which is not a good look for a radical group. And so this new splinter group, the Islamic State in West Africa, is one that has far greater support from the Islamic State, much more ideological cohesion, and is much more oriented to recruiting and to sending a message to Nigerians at a time when democracy, as I said earlier, is looking shaky and is not delivering as much as it could for Nigerians. And I personally think that the biggest threat that the Islamic State poses is that it could present potentially a credible alternative to northern Muslim youths who do not see a future in a market economy for themselves.
We'll have more in just a moment, but first you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are Judd Devermont. He's director of the Africa Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, and Bronwyn Brewton, from whom you just heard. She's director of programs, and she's the deputy director of the Africa Center at the Atlantic Council. We're analyzing what's at stake as Nigeria, Africa's most populous country, elects a new president and national assembly. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA. Here's a shout out to loyal listener Bari Nusa Mohammed from Gombe State, Nigeria, and to all our valued listeners across Nigeria. Best wishes for a peaceful and successful transfer of power. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to you, Judd Devermont, to continue our discussion about the challenges facing Nigeria as it elects a new president and legislature. You alluded to earlier other problems let's take a look at these clashes over land between farmers and cattle herders in the Northwest. I understand that more people have been killed in this context than even by Boko Haram. What's going on here, and how serious is it?
So herder-farmer violence has happened in the Middle Belt, a sort of swath of territory between the North and the South, for several years, but it really has accelerated in the last couple of years, in part because of pressures from climate change, populations moving down from Boko Haram violence, but really fighting over resources, land, water, grazing rights. And what's happened is these economic clashes happen to overlap with ethnic identities and religious identities. So it happens to be that most herders are Muslim northerners, and it happens to be that most farmers are Christians. And so while it's an economic contestation over resources, it's sort of overlapping with these ethnic and religious identities that makes it really actually the much more existential threat to Nigeria relative to what's happening in northeastern Nigeria. And this is where there's a perception that Buhari is not an honest broker in this relationship. He, as a northerner, a Fulani, hasn't done enough, I think, to reach out to Christian farmers and saying that he is, as he said in his inauguration, a president for no one and a president for everyone. And that is why most of the north central region, the Middle Belt, most of those leaders have defected to Atiku's party.
And before I turn to Bronwyn for a reaction, there's another trouble spot in the Niger Delta. Talk about the so-called Niger Delta Avengers. They've been demanding a greater share of the oil revenue produced in that impoverished southern region. How serious a threat do they pose? And do you think their grievances are justified?
Again, longstanding grievance in the Niger Delta over access to oil and livelihood. Niger Delta Avengers is only the latest manifestation of it. In 2005, 6, 7, we saw what was called the Movement for the Emancipation of the Niger Delta that took 25% off Niger's oil offline. The Avengers showed up after Buhari was elected because Buhari suspended an amnesty program that was essentially paying militants not to attack. And so the Niger Delta Avengers showed up, again, did a number of sophisticated attacks, took oil offline, and Buhari dallied for several months before essentially turning back on the amnesty program and paying them. So right now, we're seeing some of the Avengers again threatening Buhari and threatening that they will do more violence if he wins. And then you're seeing other militants, prominent militants, saying they support Buhari. So this dynamic is going to play into this election.
So your reaction, Bronwyn, to these two challenges, in addition to, of course, the security threat in the Northeast, Boko Haram and the Islamic State in West Africa, what about the Niger Delta and also these clashes over land between farmers and cattle herders in the Northwest?
Both of these are very worrying developments, and as Judd pointed out, they are very longstanding. And I'm not sure that it matters very much whether it's Buhari or Atiku in charge of the security situation. They are going to continue to take lives. In particular, the herder-farmer conflicts in the Middle Belt have claimed over 2,000 lives so far, and that is a greater number in the last year than has been killed by Boko Haram. So I think it shows the enormous fluidity of the situation in Nigeria. But the Middle Belt situation in particular, as Judd pointed out, has the potential to drive a wedge between Muslim and Christian communities in a way that so far Boko Haram has not. One of the amazing parts of the Boko Haram insurgency has actually been that it's frequently drawn Muslims and Christians together since they've been shared victims of the violence. The Middle Belt conflict is one that really plays along fault lines in a dangerous and disturbing way.
Well, back to you, Judd. It's not a very optimistic scenario that you're both painting. You have two flood candidates. You have so many problems, so many challenges, economic, security. What about the economy, Africa's top oil producer? Are there any bright spots in the country?
Well, I actually am optimistic about Nigeria over the long run. Right, I think we saw an incumbent defeated in 2015. We see governors being defeated all the time. As Bronwyn said, 51% of registered voters are between 18 and 35. There is a movement towards greater participation and a sense that you can actually vote out people you don't like, even if the two candidates are particularly flawed. The economy, we're starting to see growth again. They're at about 3% in 2018. We think that's going to carry into 2019. But we talk about Nigeria as an oil producer, and that is true. It's an oil producer, one of the largest, and that's a huge part of its government revenue. But this is not an oil economy. This is the non-oil sector of their economy is the more dynamic one, whether it's telecoms, whether it's the banking sector, whether it's the entertainment center, whether it's agriculture. This is where people are employed. The government profits over the oil. People are involved in a very different part of the economy. And I think that's really exciting to sort of walk away from this old way of thinking about Nigeria as an oil economy and thinking about it as a much more dynamic one.
Do you see it that way, Bronwyn?
I certainly think that the Nigerian economy is it's the largest on the African continent and certainly one of the most dynamic, no doubt. And I'm also quite bullish on Nigeria's future. I'm less optimistic in terms of the impact of this particular election. The 2015 election was a change election. This one is really not. And even in 2015, I think only 43% of the Nigerian population voted. This time around, I think we'd be really lucky to see even 35% of the population turning out to vote between two pretty uninspiring candidates. I hate to strike a negative or pessimistic note on this, but I think that in a country of 190 million people, it's disappointing that we have the slate of candidates that we have. And I really kind of despair for the future of the democracy in Nigeria if we can't do better.
Well, back to you. And as we close, Judd Devermont, with respect to the process itself, are you confident that the elections will be relatively free and fair? And how about voting in the Northeast? Will that be complicated? And could that produce grievances or challenges? Do you see any potential rigging taking place? There are many election observers on the ground. How do you see the process itself?
Yeah, I don't think we're out of the woods in terms of credible elections in Nigeria. I mean, 2015 was a high mark, but there are signs, and even 15, but certainly signs now of problems. Vote buying in the gubernatorial runoffs in Ekiti and Oshun, overuse of the security services in some of those by-elections, questions about IDPs, how will they vote, where will they vote. There's been accusations about the impartiality of the Electoral Commission. I tend to think that the Nigerian chair of the Electoral Commission is a pretty upstanding man. But because there's been some parts of the INEC that are key figures that are related to Buhari, that has been cast aspersions on it. And the fact that they recently removed the Chief Justice so close to election has also raised some concerns about the impartiality that they're taking out the umpire.
And how about you, Bronwyn? How do you see the on-the-ground operation going forward, particularly with conflict in the Northeast? Will people be able to get to the polls safely, and with respect to any kind of shenanigans that may take place?
I think that obviously there's a real risk of violence in the Northeast where Islamic State, West Africa, and Boko Haram are operating. And I would be very surprised if you didn't see some attacks on voters. More broadly, I also think that there's a very high risk of manipulation of the election results. By all accounts, this is going to be a close election, and there's going to be a lot of temptation for both candidates to try to put their fingers on the scale. Judd has listed out the particular reasons that we have to be concerned about manipulation. And to be fair, it's not only Buhari who's probably been guilty of manipulation in the past when he was vice president. Atiku's party also was well known for its rigging of elections and its violence against voters to stay in power. So all around, I think that there is a high likelihood that we'll see some form of shenanigans and very likely a court challenge, because when you have a close election, the losing party has every incentive to challenge the results. So most likely that is going to happen, which means it'll be a drawn out affair.
Well, we shall see in the coming days, and we will bring you the results here on The Voice of America. I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, Judd Devermont. He's director of the Africa Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, and Bronwyn Brewton. She's the deputy director of the Africa Center at the Atlantic Council. Thanks so much, both of you, for coming in and sharing your wonderful insights.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Patrice Martin for booking our guests. Our engineer was Joe Gill. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.